This is number 0067, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0067. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Roger Nygaard, who is the director of the film The Nature of Existence. It's a film that deals with philosophies and religion. The film has some comical elements, but some people don't have a sense of humor when it comes to religion.
When you're part of a, let's say, a religious group or any social group, the rituals in that group are going to appear ridiculous to someone who's not a part of that group. But if you're within it, it's what you grew up with, it becomes sort of personal. And when someone questions it or challenges it, people do take it personally.
Barry Seltzer is the co-author of Fat Cats and Lucky Dogs, How to Leave Some of Your Estate to Your Pet. He helps people navigate estate laws involving animals and even custody cases, which can be costly.
There are bitter, bitter, bitter custody disputes over pets. And in the U.S., there was a dispute, a California couple. They had a beautiful dog, a pointer greyhound called Gigi, and they ended up having a very protracted battle. In fact, it ended up costing them $100,000 in legal fees.
Memory expert Dave Farrow is on the program. Is it more difficult, as they say, to teach an old dog new tricks?
It is more difficult to teach an old dog new tricks. That's true, because our brain gets more and more wired or more and more used to what we're doing on a regular basis. But it's all the more important to learn new things as you get older, because of that tendency of our brain to kind of get stuck into a rut. We like to do the same things that we like to do again and again.
And of course, we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0067, is Anne LeClaire, a television reporter for Global Montreal. That's also the place that I work during the day. Thank you very much, Anne LeClaire, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the Stuff File news, shall we? First of all, I want to say that I hope all of our American friends had a good Thanksgiving. And this first story this week is especially for you, as I'm sure you'll enjoy the irony. It comes from the UK. Turkey tycoon Bernard Matthews, the man behind the infamous Turkey Twizzler, has died at the age of 80. His death came on Thursday. That's right. The UK's turkey tycoon died on American Thanksgiving Day. I'm guessing there are a lot of turkeys who need to check their alibis. Matthews was one of the first businessmen to personally advertise their products on British television, coining the memorable catchphrase, "They're bootyful," in his rich Norfolk accent. Matthews, the son of a mechanic, left school at the age of 16 and went on to become a household name, but he stepped down as chairman of the company on his 80th birthday, which was only earlier this year. So the turkey tycoon is no more. Meanwhile, in November, after her fourth-grade son was allegedly slapped by his teacher at a Kansas City, Missouri elementary school, by the way, the son is black and the teacher is white, this might come in handy at the end of the story, Lisa Henry Bowen submitted a 40-page list of reparations she expects from President Obama and two dozen other officials. Included in the many demands, $1.25 million in cash, $13,500 in Walmart gift cards, free college education, Disney World vacations, private tennis lessons, an African safari, her mortgage paid off, home remodeling, 9 years of free medical and dental coverage, and a 9-year consulting contract with the school district at $15,000 a month. Anticipating criticism that she had gone too far, she added that opponents can, quote, "kiss my entire black ass," unquote. She also said, "I haven't begun to go far enough." Oh, Lisa, you've gone so far, you're coming back around the other side. But hey, good luck with that. Moving right along, under the headline of sibling rivalry gone berserk, in Victoria, British Columbia, police had to break up two grown brothers, I emphasize the fact they're grown brothers, fighting over who got the bigger piece of steak. The younger of the two, the 17-year-old, went berserk and began smashing things with a hockey stick in their apartment because, despite him doing the cooking, his 22-year-old brother got the larger piece of steak for dinner. The building manager called police after hearing the ruckus. When police arrived, the younger brother had already punched out some of the drywall, as well as smashing a computer monitor. He also took a toaster into the bathroom and threatened to kill himself by throwing it into a bathtub full of water. Boy, he really must be a good cook, and that had to be some steak. Police finally managed to calm him down, and he was taken to hospital for a checkup from the neck up. On to Rudd, Iowa. You listen to this show long enough, you know we love our truck spills. Here's the latest. Northern Iowa authorities say they've cleaned up a slippery mess after a tipped semi-trailer spilled Jell-O and pudding cups all across the road. The Floyd County Sheriff's Office said 52 pallets of gelatin and pudding fell from the trailer when its top ripped open near Rudd. It took crews 3 hours to clean up the debris. The sheriff's office says 39-year-old semi-trailer driver Eric Young of Charleston, South Carolina, wasn't able to make a turn and went into a ditch where the rig rolled onto its side. Young and 32-year-old passenger Martin Brandon of Bridgeport, Connecticut, suffered minor injuries. Damage to the semi-trailer is estimated at $50,000. Hey, apparently there isn't always room for Jell-O. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before we get to our first guest on the program, two suspects face multiple charges after North Carolina police say they left a note thanking the homeowners for the $5,000 worth of electronics gear and food that they stole. Fayetteville police spokesman Dan Grubb said the pair left one note on a white paper napkin saying simply, "Thanks." Grubb said a second message etched into a wall said the same thing and added, "We love the stuff we got." Police charged Dewan Marcus Avant and Daryl Sturdivant Jr. with breaking and entering, larceny, and other charges. Both 19-year-olds are from Fayetteville. The homeowners said the stolen loot included a box of corn dogs, frozen chicken, and beer. These two guys, by the way, came very, very close to being the idiot of the day. Close, but not close enough. That comes later. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program. Director Roger Nygaard is someone we had on our old radio show several years ago. Now, back then, we were talking to him about his films Trekkies 1 and Trekkies 2. For his latest film that deals with religion, Roger traveled the globe for 4 years, exploring the world's philosophies, religions, and belief systems, shooting more than 450 hours of footage. The end result is now on a DVD, and it's called The Nature of Existence. Roger is on the line with us right now from California. Hi, Roger.
Hey, good to talk to you.
Nice to have you back on the program. As I said, we talked to you back when Trekkies 2 was out, and the people who are big Star Trek fans, it's almost a religion to them. So I'm wondering, in doing this film, which actually touches on religions, if you found similarities.
Yeah, I mean, you could certainly say, and depending how you want to define religion, but people who are Star Trek fans, they follow a TV show. Probably one reason is because of the underlying philosophy of the TV show, you know, the prime directive and infinite diversity and infinite, et cetera. There are all these Roddenberry philosophies that underlie this show, and I think that Star Trek fans all share that philosophy. They're brought together by a common belief system. So, yes, in one sense, it's a religious expression. Now, this film, it's really almost a direct remake of Trekkies 2 structurally, because I traveled the world and again spoke with people about their beliefs and their passions and what they're interested in and collected them all into a movie so the audience can sort of judge for themselves.
What did you discover? First of all, are you a religious person yourself?
Well, it goes back to defining that term. You know, I guess a better term for me would be someone who is I found myself wondering what I was and went on a quest to find out, went on a journey to ask people about their different religious beliefs and earnestly wanting to understand why does a Sikh believe what is a Sikh or a Jainist or a Taoist, never mind, you know, the Lutherans or the Episcopalians that I grew up with. You know, I found out there's so much out there, and it made me very curious about where I fit into everything. And I feel like I'm still on that journey, even after a 4-year trip on the road and talking to hundreds of people it sort of never ends.
Well, in making the film and in traveling around the world to do this, did it in any way, shape, or form change your personal religious or spiritual beliefs?
Oh, yeah. I mean, every person I met and talked to changed me in some way. Even the people I really ultimately disagreed with. You know, in one sense, one of the interviewees in the movie says that the person who challenges you is your liberator. So the more different they were sometimes from where I began, the more it provided me for growth. And, I mean, I like the term spiritual personally. It's kind of in between. I think what I found is a lot of people have a problem with organizations, and religion often becomes an organization. And organizations are run by people. People tend to have agendas, and so I have a difficult time trusting people's agendas sometimes. Whereas the idea of spirituality is much more, it's more open-minded. It's an open-minded quest. One person, when I did a Q&A session after a screening, the way he put it, and I thought this was very astute, he said, the difference between religion and spirituality is that religion puts people into different groups where they have different rules. Spirituality embraces everyone. And part of the problem of different groups is that once you group people into different, you know, we're different from them, conflict can come out of those differences.
Well, speaking of conflict, one of the things about religion is that it's interesting to note those who are most rabid about it, regardless of what their religious background might be, usually tend not to have any kind of sense of humor revolving around their religion. They take it very, very seriously. And from that perspective, have you had people who, as the Queen would say, are not amused by your film?
Yeah, well, you know, in the first place, to me, the film, and sort of, I guess, all my films, but certainly the new film, is a comedy because it's about people and life. And life is absurd. And if you don't laugh, you go insane. It's how we deal with grief and anxiety and the unknown is through laughter. But you're right. You know, when you're part of, let's say, a religious group or any social group, the rituals in that group are going to appear ridiculous to someone who's not a part of that group. But if you're within it, it's what you grew up with, it becomes sort of personal. And when someone questions it or challenges it, people do take it personally. It's, I mean, let's say you're not Jewish and you see these Orthodox Jews with the tefillin on their head, the boxes they wear on their forehead. That would seem absurd if you're not one of them. Or the Pope and his gigantic hat. How big a hat do you need? Well, if you're not a Catholic person, you didn't grow up with that, that would seem ridiculous, right? But if you are, that's just normal.
Well,
so it's all a matter of perception.
And right now, as you can see around the world, when it comes to certain religions, and right now the Muslim religion seems to be under attack worldwide, fashion seems to be the issue for a lot of governments as to what people can or cannot or should not wear.
That's true, yeah, especially with regard to women. And, I mean, I think that has to do with an element of control in trying to exercise control over people. But then again, that's one thing that religion provides guidelines and rules for living. I mean, ultimately, the Bible or most any holy book is primarily a code for living. It's a collection of wisdom from hundreds, if not thousands, of years of people's experience, passing down what they found to be a better way to live your life, you know, in their opinion. And a lot of it's tested, it's time-tested. But it has to do more with the group, what's best for the group. And sometimes an individual may find that it's not what's best for them.
In putting this film together, The Nature of Existence, who were you seeing as your primary audience? Believers or non-believers or both?
Well, you know, I've screened the film for both. And if you've seen Trekkies, which I know you have, you can look at that film, whether you are a believer, you know, a Star Trek fan, or you're an outsider, and enjoy the film. Both sides can see the film and enjoy it. And that was my goal in making that film. I wanted the people in the film to be able to laugh and enjoy it, as well as those outside who may not be a part of that group. Similarly, in this case, I guess maybe this is just partly my style as a filmmaker, I wanted to profile all the different belief systems on the planet, whether it's Native Americans, pagans, Catholics, Taoists, Buddhists, and atheists, Satanists. You get to sample all of the world's beliefs and judge for yourself. And the thing about people, though, is I like people, and I like meeting people and learning about them. And so I think, I hope that's what comes through in the movie, is that, you know what, people are all right. We all have different belief systems. And one thing I learned is we're never all going to agree, ever. That's just not going to happen. So our only hope, ultimately, is that we learn about each other enough to allow others to have different belief systems.
Have you had the opportunity to screen the film for not just lay people, but religious leaders?
Yeah, and you know, several who are in the movie, of course, have seen it, as well as others at screenings. And it certainly gets people talking and provides a chance for debate and discussion. And religious leaders like that more than, I mean, that's the best thing, is a way to get people thinking and talking about this stuff. I mean, that's why they exist. They exist to talk about why are we here and what is our purpose and what is the soul and what does God want from us and what is faith and how do we find truth. All of these questions are asked in the movie, and it prompts people to discuss that after the movie.
The movie is entitled The Nature of Existence, and it's done by the same guy who did Trekkies 1 and Trekkies 2. And by the way, I think I spoke to you when I had you on the show the last time. I said I enjoyed the other two films, but I'm a Trekker.
There is that
ongoing debate. So I look forward to this one as well. It's called The Nature of Existence, which is now available on DVD. And I thank you, Roger, very much for being on the program with us.
Sure, yeah. Well, anyone is interested in the film, you know, the website is thenatureofexistence.com, and I have all my questions on the website. If you want to see all the questions I asked in the movie and go ahead and answer them, you can do so on the website. I love hearing from people.
Excellent. Thanks for being on the show once again, sir.
Anytime.
Director Roger Nygaard. His new film is The Nature of Existence, and it's now available on DVD. You can visit the website at thenatureofexistence.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0067, and you'll find links to Roger's site and to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order the film directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. You know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
From the land that brought you maple syrup, poutine, ice hockey, and Pamela Anderson, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we'll meet the author of Fat Cats and Lucky Dogs. Plus, we'll also talk to memory expert Dave Farrow. And of course, we have an idiot of the day. But right now, more Stuff File news for your listening pleasure. And okay, here's a story that's just plain idiotic in this overprotective, paranoid world that we live in. In Wisconsin, a local minister thought that he was doing a good deed when driving past Rolling Hills Elementary School. His big crime, stopping his car and getting out to throw a ball back over the fence to some playing kids. But that's a big no-no, apparently, and police were called out to patrol the area. The media got a hold of it, and after learning that the incident had been in the news, the minister left a message with the school over the weekend, reassuring everyone that there was nothing to worry about. Rolling Hills principal Nick Rykoff then talked to the pastor, who asked to remain unnamed. Rykoff then left a message for all parents saying, "A local pastor had stepped forward, identifying himself as the man who threw the ball back onto our playground." Now, after the incident first took place, it was Rykoff who sent a letter to parents stating that a man in his early 50s driving a dark green Pontiac Sunfire pulled onto the shoulder of Highway NN, got out of the car, threw a ball over the fence that had bounced into a ditch, returned to the car, and drove away. Rykoff later said, "Unfortunately, sometimes well-intentioned actions can seem suspicious. Our playground supervisors will continue to be vigilant about reporting anything that could seem out of the ordinary to the office. We are, however, relieved that this incident was an innocent one." Hello, it always was an innocent one. You're the clowns who turned it into something sinister. Wow. Meanwhile, how's this for a dilemma? In Portsmouth, Rhode Island, two young men were seen carrying a safe, which they took out of a house, down a driveway, and into a car. Neighbors called police, who found and stopped the car. The two men, both 19, were brought to the police station for questioning, and while they were there, the police received a call from a man reporting his safe was stolen. So police asked the caller, 45-year-old Sean Riley, to come on down. To verify that it was indeed his safe, police had Riley open the safe using the combination code. But when the safe door opened, the officers got quite a surprise. Inside was $5,000 in cash and about 2 pounds of marijuana. Of course, this discovery fascinated the officers, who wondered what else Riley might possess. So they went to his house, where they found 14 marijuana plants growing in a shed at the rear of his property and more pot inside the house. So Riley was charged with possession of marijuana with intent to deliver. And the two burglary suspects were arrested, too. All in a good day's work, don't you think? Okay, 70-year-old Jacqueline Cutright was sitting on her toilet when she was surprised by a knife-wielding robber in a clown mask. Allegedly, 20-year-old Corey Buckley broke into Cutright's Akron, Ohio home through a basement window. Now, Cutright said the clown robber stole her car and escaped with $28 and about $1,000 worth of costume jewelry. He demanded to know where she kept her drugs and money. Cutright said she told him, "Boy, did you break into the wrong house." Buckley fled with Cutright's Ford Escort after 2 hours of ransacking her home, but he crashed the car, crawled out a window, and later allegedly confessed to officers. And that's why some people, as you know, are afraid of clowns. At North Brookfield Elementary School in Massachusetts, teacher Wendy Scott actually tried to ban pencils and pens in her classroom. Her bizarre memo to the students' parents stated, "Students would no longer be allowed to bring writing implements to school." It said pencils would be provided for students in class, and any students caught with pencils or pens after November 15th would face disciplinary action for having materials, quote, "to build weapons," unquote. Not surprisingly, the Massachusetts School District is distancing itself away from Wacky Wendy, saying she never got permission to enforce this ridiculous demand. We really slowly are turning into a nanny state, aren't we? If only by one teacher at a time. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before we get to our next guest, here is another case of when pontificators from the pulpit should just learn to shut up. A pastor who barred church officials from using Facebook saying that it could lead to adultery, is temporarily stepping down from the pulpit following his admission that he engaged in a three-way sexual relationship a decade ago. The Reverend Cedric Miller made worldwide headlines recently when he urged congregants at his Living World Christian Fellowship Church in Neptune, New Jersey, to drop their Facebook accounts because he believes the social networking site facilitates affairs. Days later, Miller offered to step down after the Ashbury Park Press reported on a 10-year-old affair of his own involving a three-way sexual relationship with his wife and a male church assistant. Now, last week, Miller had ordered about 50 married church officials to delete their Facebook accounts or resign from their leadership positions. He also suggested that married members of the congregation do likewise and said he was deleting his own account. What's the word I'm looking for here? What is it? Oh, yes. Hypocrite. There you go. Nice going, Padre. Nice going. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program. There are many pet lovers out there, so occasionally the question comes up of how do you care for your pets after you're gone? Well, you can find that answer in the book, Fat Cats and Lucky Dogs, How to Leave Some of Your Estate to Your Pet. On the line with us right now is the co-author of the book, Barry Seltzer. He joins us from Toronto. Hi, Barry.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us.
My pleasure.
This book not only covers what to do if you pass away and you have to take care of your pets, or you want to take care of your pets, but it also deals with, I understand, breakups and who gets custody of pets, correct?
We're going to go right to that. In fact, you're right. There are bitter custody disputes over pets, both in Canada and the United States. More and more jurisdictions are looking at companion animals as something more than merely an animal, but maybe not akin to a child, but somewhere below that. And in the U.S., there was a dispute, a California couple. They had a beautiful dog, a pointer greyhound called Gigi, and they ended up having a very protracted battle. In fact, it ended up costing them $100,000 in legal fees. It was a three-day trial. They had testimony from animal experts who were called from each home to determine where Gigi would be better off and what would be in the best interest of this pet. And eventually the wife was granted full custody, and her brilliance, or her lawyer's brilliance, I guess, she ended up creating a video called The Day in the Life of Gigi to show how well-suited her home was for the dog, and she won custody.
Wow.
Now another guy, go ahead, Peter.
No, go ahead.
Another fellow in Alberta, he was a truck driver, and he was ordered to pay his wife, and I think this is the first and only decision so far of its kind in North America. He was ordered to pay $200 a month in dog support, plus $2,000 in retroactive payments. Now, they had a St. Bernard called Crunchy. Need I say more?
Yeah.
The food bill alone is probably more than $200 a month, but it was a very interesting decision. Now, visitation rights were apparently not included in that case. So there is a lot of that going on, and it's changed. I mean, I'm making light of it. The truth is, people care for their pets. They take it very seriously in terms of their attachment, both emotionally and responsibility, and to the point where you see people are going to court over this.
Now, admittedly, full disclosure, I am not necessarily a pet person, but it is clear that people are more and more attached to their animals than ever before. When did you, as an estate planner, realize that there was a plan of action for you and not only a business but a book?
Well, I mean, certainly right from day one. I mean, when we started practicing a long time ago, I won't tell you how many decades, but many, many, I always had the pleasure of having companion animals. And so, you know, in all jurisdictions, both Canada, Quebec, and the United States, and Louisiana, pets are still considered to be property. They're just elevated to a special class of property, and I use the word just advisedly because it's important for people. So it's been going on for a long time, but certainly in the last probably 10, 12 years, it's been more prominent, and particularly in the minds of lawyers and law students, because most universities now that teach law have a section related to animal law. So it's a very large growth area. In fact, I would let you know this, you know, depending on which poll you read, this year alone, $57.5 billion have been spent on pets in North America.
That's a lot of dough.
I can tell you, it's amazing.
That's a lot of dough indeed. So what is the biggest misconception, I guess, that people might have? Because when I first introduced you, I talked about estate planning. Are more and more people thinking about their pets after they're gone than they used to?
Well, I think hopefully, Peter, they're thinking about it before they go, and certainly they do. And if your question means do they plan for their pets, yes. I have probably 3 in 10 clients put a pet provision. And in fact, a woman was in today, and we drafted a pet provision for her pet. So it's not unusual. It's very common. Professionals who practice in this area of law are aware of it, as are accountants who practice in this area. And, you know, certainly you hear about the unusual cases like the Leona Helmsleys and the Eleanor Richleys and the Sydney Altmans and even Oprah Winfrey, you know, who leave very large sums of money for the care of their pets, and the courts step in very often and reduce it because, you know, it has to be within a reasonable framework. But notwithstanding, I think if it's happening to celebrities, I think the more common situation is becoming less, of a surprise to people. So more and more people are planning, and there are important periods of time that you need to plan. I mean, you know, and one of the biggest mistakes, if I might mention this, it's kind of a segue, and a false assumption, people think that someone will step in and take care of their pets if they die or if they become incapacitated, and it doesn't happen. And unfortunately, many, many, many pets end up as a result in, pounds or other facilities and are euthanized. So it's really important to put in a plan, and it's a very easy thing to do. It's not a difficult or expensive process.
And I know the stories you often talk about that get the stories out there, the anecdotes, are dealing with people who are very, very wealthy in some cases. But that's not necessarily the situation that is clearly an everyday one. People with far less means still have pets that need to be taken care of after they're gone.
And there are a lot of ways of doing it. I mean, truthfully, you're talking like, you know, I have a boxer, Rocky, and I want to leave Rocky, you know, with my Uncle Joe, who really likes him, and Rocky happens to like my Uncle Joe. And you know what? Uncle Joe can't really afford the food and maybe the veterinarian bills because Rocky's getting a bit older. So, you know what? I'm going to leave him $5,000 or $8,000 or $10,000 over the next 10 years that my pet, you know, is expected to live. And I hope that'll help defray the expense for Uncle Joe, who's taken on this enormous responsibility, even though he enjoys the dog, to take care of him. So you're not being ridiculous about it. You're not saying, you know, $10 million to Lucky, you know, Leona Helmsley's dog Lucky, which, was reduced, by the courts to $2 million, which I'm sure most people would be very happy to receive. We're not talking about that. We're talking about something reasonable. And where people don't have $5,000 or $10,000, which is also a possibility, but they love their pet and they want to provide something, they might be able to be in a position to buy a small insurance policy if they're insurable and then leave the policy as a named beneficiary to the uncle who's going to take care of the pet, and they're trusting that the uncle will do that, or to their estate and set it up in a sort of a trust-like arrangement.
Okay.
You know, so there are very simple ways of doing this.
Okay, so whether the amount is large or small, there is no one can factor in the unknown. So let's say with your dog, Rocky, it goes to your uncle, and your uncle does the best he can in taking care of the pet, but for whatever reason, the animal dies.
Then there's going to be that expense as well, and it's a good point.
What happens if the money you've left your uncle for your pet exceeds the cost of, you know, preparing for your dog's demise? Does that money go to the person, or is it willed to another charity, or is that your option to do that before you go?
It's your option. And certainly you can think about it, and you may decide, you know what, Uncle Joe put a lot of time in, or he was willing to put a lot of time in, I want to compensate him. And in fact, when you're doing the plan, you may not necessarily merely look at the cost of special medical attention or routine vet bills or food per year. You might also look at other needs and also consider whether or not you want to compensate the caregiver for the time that they're going to put in to deal with the pet. And then you can also decide if you want the funds to go be gifted over. We had talked about Eleanor Richley. Eleanor Richley was the Quaker State oil heiress. And when she passed away, she'd accumulated 150 stray dogs during her lifetime. And Musketeer, the last living dog that she had accumulated, she had left her very large estate to take care of these animals, and this dog at that point in time was the richest dog in America. But when he passed away, the funds went to a university. So she gifted it over, and the remainder went somewhere else, so not to the caregivers. And so it's a choice, a personal choice, and one that certainly people are free to make, whether the sum is large or the sum is small.
Well, that's a similar story to the Sidney Altman one, is it not?
Yeah, Sidney Altman. I like Sidney Altman. He was the Beverly Hills fellow out of California. He died at about age 60, but he had friends and family who were really astounded to find out that he left $350,000 and his Beverly Hills mansion valued at $5 million for the care of his 15-year-old Cocker Spaniel, Samantha. Now, he had had a longtime human companion to differentiate from his animal companion, a 32-year-old woman by the name of Marie Dana, who he ended up giving her a stipend of about $60,000 a year. And she was allowed to live in the mansion provided she continued to care for Samantha. And the will also stated upon the death of the dog, Dana would lose her money, and the house was to be sold. Anyway, Dana sued for half the estate, and the judge who heard the case suggested they settle out of court. So people do very interesting things. I agree with you.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that's interesting about the book, and I think you touched on it earlier, the book being Fat Cats and Lucky Dogs, is it deals with the laws in greater regions, laws in the United States, laws in Canada, laws here in Quebec. So everything is basically covered in this one book.
We hope it is. I mean, certainly the truth is that every jurisdiction, lawyers unlike doctors, can't practice in multiple jurisdictions based on the knowledge base. I mean, whether you're a doctor or a lawyer, you still have to be licensed. But the knowledge base of the human body has wider global reach than the law, and each lawyer is restricted to the area that they practice in, and so it should be. So if you're going to have someone deal with your stuff in Quebec, you need to go to a notary or a Quebec lawyer that practices estate law. The same thing in the United States. You're going to go to an estate lawyer in the state that you're in, and some states are different than others. Currently, there are 43 states and one district, the District of Columbia, that permits actual pet trusts, where a trust can be set up under either the Uniform Tax Code or the Trust Code, rather, or the Uniform Probate Code, or through legislation for a pet. You don't have anything like that here in Canada, and certainly not in common law jurisdictions, but you could set up a trust where you leave the funds to an individual for the purpose of taking care of a pet. Now, they sound similar, but they're very different things. So you have to go to a lawyer in the jurisdiction you're in to help you implement your plan, and this should only be part of your plan because, truthfully, people listening should not only take care of their pet, but their families. Hmm. And I got to tell you, depending on what poll you read, more than 50% of all Canadian families throughout the country do not even have a will in place, let alone powers of attorney.
Right. The book is called Fat Cats and Lucky Dogs. It's written by Barry Seltzer and Jerry W. Baer, and I thank you, Barry, for being on the program with us.
Thank you very much, Peter. I appreciate the time.
Barry Seltzer, co-author of Fat Cats and Lucky Dogs, How to Leave Some of Your Estate to Your Pet. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0067, and you'll find links to Barry's site, which is fatcatsandluckydogs.com, and to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones. Today, I'd like to talk about something a little different. It still involves lawsuits, but it came to my attention by way of a successful actor. John Ratzenberger is the actor, and while you may know him because of his role on the TV show Cheers, or the voices he's given characters in movies like Toy Story, he's making news now for a different reason. With America struggling to emerge from a recession, John Ratzenberger is tackling one of the problems many experts believe is a major cause of the jobs crisis, the shortage of skilled workers. Ratzenberger was a construction worker before he was an actor, and he's using that background to produce a documentary that reveals how this lack of skilled workers occurred. Now, let's be fair, there are many reasons for the jobs crisis today, but Ratzenberger reveals that the lawsuit problem is one of the culprits. Innovators and employers have told him about how lawsuit abuse not only drains money away from job-producing ventures, it has even discouraged schools from offering vocational training needed to develop the skilled trades. Learn more. Go to my website at bobdirigojones.com.
What are they saying about if the rains don't cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. Informed or entertained? Hey, you're doing both. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And we're in the home stretch of this edition of The Stuff File program. Still to come, we'll speak to a memory expert, and of course we'll have an idiot of the day. And speaking of memories, before I forget, just want to mention very quickly that you can get your very own Stuff File gear, as I've mentioned on a few shows now, by checking out the Stuff File store. There you'll find Stuff File t-shirts, cups, mugs, water bottles, tote bags, and even teddy bears. And it's just in time for the holiday season, so you can order all the stuff you want. Hint, hint. Great stocking stuffers. Just in time for the holidays. That's all I'm saying. Go to the website, thestufffile.com, and check out the Stuff File store. One more quick Stuff File story for you before we get to our guest. A 69-year-old French woman is recovering in hospital after she was found in her bathroom where she'd been trapped for 20 days after the door lock broke. She survived her time in the windowless room in her home in a Parisian suburb by drinking tap water. She tried to get help by banging on the floor and tapping on the pipes in hopes that her neighbors would hear her, but instead they thought it was noisy workmen and started a petition to stop it. You could hear banging sounds like a hammer, even at night, a neighbor told local media. Gee, you think somebody perhaps might just, like, go upstairs or downstairs or across the hall or whatever it is and knock on her door? No. Concerned neighbors eventually realized they had not seen the woman recently and alerted police, and a group of firefighters burst into her home and found her in a very weakened state. Nice to have attentive neighbors, huh? 20 days. 20 days. Maybe they just forgot about her. And that's a segue into our next guest, by the way. Dave Farrow is one of the world's most foremost experts on memory. He is a 2-time Guinness record holder for greatest memory. He's also a speed reader and a motivational speaker, and he's on the line with us right now. Hi, Dave.
Hey, thanks very much for having me on the show, man. I love doing your show.
Well, it's always great to have you on the show because you're one of the guests who doesn't forget he's booked.
Yeah.
So that's always great.
I can imagine your industry, you know. Hey, I get my fair share of forgetful people, too. So we could talk about that over a beer sometime, I'm sure.
Okay. Now, recently, here in Canada, there was a CBC documentary done on you, right?
Yeah, I was very flattered. It was awesome. Actually, I couldn't talk about it for a good year while they were editing it, but we went all the way to Scotland to look at memory and the brain. We traveled all over North America. And basically, the focus of this documentary, if you haven't seen it already, you can actually go onto the CBC website and check it out. It's called Where Did I Put My Memory? And it's actually directed by Josh Fried. He's a very, very well-known director. Basically, it's the answer to all the information that we now know about how the brain works. We know for a fact that if you exercise your brain in the right way, you'll have a strong memory your whole life. And, of course, it's filled with, you know, ways to exercise it, just like all my programs and products are, of course.
Now, I've heard from people, they say that you got to, you know, use it or lose it. You got to exercise your brain. But one of the things I heard, which is rather interesting, and you tell me if you concur with this, you know, people say don't do things like Sudoku puzzles over and over again or crossword puzzles because all you're doing is using the same part of your brain. You've got to stimulate your brain in different ways. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. Now, I'm not saying, no, don't do them, but you can do them for entertainment purposes, or you could do them to kind of work on your, improve your logic ability, your logic powers, but don't do them and expect to improve your brain, because anything that you do repetitively, you get lowering lower gains each time. You know, the more you do it, the less your brain actually improves. The only thing that has been shown 100% to improve your brain power, in fact, to lower your risk for Alzheimer's by up to 80%, is simply getting stuff in and regurgitating it out. The old-fashioned memorize something and then recall it. So I actually suggest to people, of course, take my memory course, and that teaches you a lot of techniques, but also, get a hobby or, decide to learn the guitar or learn the piano, something you've always wanted to learn, and just the act of learning it, no matter how good or bad you sound at it, just the act of giving that effort out will dramatically improve the power of your brain. And of course, I hope I can mention my website
yes.
to direct people to more of our tools. One of the things I'm famous is I can teach you how to, say walk into a room and memorize like 50 people's names in a row, or memorize, all the foreign language vocabulary you have to memorize within hours. That's some of the techniques that I teach. It's what's got me into the Guinness Book of Records. So if somebody hasn't heard about me before, go on to, and this will be an easy website to remember, go on to yourmemorysucks.com. and if you go on there, this actually you can log in, just give you your name and email address, and you can it's absolutely free. You can actually take a free lesson that'll triple your memory instantaneously, and we used to actually charge $50 for this lesson, but we're offering it for free over the holidays. So again, that's yourmemorysucks.com, and you can get a free lesson that will guaranteed triple your memory power in about 7 minutes.
Now, there is that old saying that you can't teach an old dog new tricks, and while I don't believe that is the case, is it more difficult to learn as you age?
It is more difficult to teach an old dog new tricks. That's true, because our brain gets more and more wired or more and more used to what we're doing on a regular basis. But it's all the more important to learn new things as you get older, because of that tendency of our brains to kind of get stuck into a rut. We like to do the same things that we like to do again and again. So it's actually more important than ever, the older you get, to challenge people. If somebody is listening right now and they're dealing with a loved one who is maybe borderline Alzheimer's or is having dementia or something like that, I want you to know that I've been there. I'm the top memory expert, but I actually have my grandmother has Alzheimer's. And one of the quickest tips I can give you for that is to get them to be more social. Get them out of their own little box of their daily routine, which is really tough, because if they're in a nursing home, they get a daily routine all the time, and that's the worst thing for their brain. But get them doing something social outside of that box, and they'll actually, your brain will thank you, because it's anything that challenges your mind is the most effective thing that you can do for your brain, anything that's a challenge.
Okay, now, you mentioned the CBC documentary, and a lot of Canadian fans are fully aware of who you are from that. People in the United States listening to you might remember when you were on Regis and Kathy Lee. Regis and Kelly, I should say.
There you go.
Not too long ago. And I spoke to you last year, or I guess now a couple of years ago, when you were in a window in New York, a storefront window. You were sitting there for hours on end using a Sony reader. And I understand you did the same thing recently in Toronto.
Yeah, actually, it was actually a historic time. I was able to blog and get the ear of over 100 million people who logged into the website. I know it sounds an astounding number, but this went crazy internationally. But it was you might not have heard about it, because it was right around the time of the U.S. election, so that kind of eclipsed all the press that was coming. But internationally, we got over 100 million people to see the back of my head on this webcam when I was speed reading on the Sony reader. And it was just to prove that anybody can read fast on the Sony reader and it doesn't hurt your eyes. But it was a really historic time, and we did it again in Toronto just recently in September. I was living in the Sony Center just before it was reopened to kind of call attention to the Sony Center, and for every book I read, two e-readers were given to libraries in Toronto, and I think we gave away over 100 libraries, because I got over 50 books. So it was a great event. It wasn't quite as long as the first one. I didn't quite want to go in there for a full month, though.
It's funny, because you mentioned reading, and you mentioned memory, and you mentioned doing things slightly different. When it comes to reading for yourself, do you like to read different things? Because I know people, when even those who are voracious readers, seem to stick to a certain track. They like certain mysteries, or they like certain romance novels.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Or talk about politics, too. You know, that was one of the greatest things I experienced about this, is that they gave me a reading list. Like, they gave me a lot of freedom, but there were some things that I had to read. And interestingly enough, politically, I had to read both sides of every single political argument. And because you're a speed reader, you actually have that luxury where you can learn both sides to an argument, and I highly recommend it. You know, if you're incredibly conservative or incredibly liberal right now, read the opposite to what you would normally read, and you might learn something. I swear to you, there's something to learn on every side, everywhere, every book out there. Even if you don't think there's anything to learn from a book by, I don't know, Joan Rivers or something like that, or I'm thinking of some celebrity that you might not think, oh, there's nothing you can learn from it. There's always something you can learn from it, and that's the pleasure of being a speed reader, where I can go, like, you know, 8 times faster than most people. So I can do 8 books in the time it would take for most people to do one. And of course, you can find out more about that on yourmemorysucks.com as well, or you can just, you know, Google Dave Farrow, and we'll direct you to some of our speed reading techniques. But that's one of the pleasures of it, is you have the freedom to read more.
Now, we mentioned the CBC documentary, and people can check out the website and find more information about that. Also, check out the CBC website. But you have an infomercial as well.
Yes, I actually am very proud. I am the Tony Robbins of memory. That's what the media is calling me. And right now, this program is the best-selling program in the world on memory, by far. And it's there for a reason. We worked really, really hard on it. And we've actually got a successful infomercial in 4 different countries now, and we're coming to Canada. So I'll be the sham wow guy, but for memory, in no time. Ha-ha. And I love that. I know it sounds cheesy and everything, but I mean, and I hope I'm not, like, recognized on the street or anything, but honestly, these techniques, they date back thousands of years. I'm the only one who's really invented new techniques in this modern generation, and they kind of get out there. I mean, we've had people who are just on the edge of dropping out of school, and they take some of my program, and all of a sudden they're on the dean's list, and they're just choosing which college they want to go to. And, like, this is happening not once or twice, but again and again and again. So we know that the political system is going to take a long time. We're lobbying the government, but it's going to take a long time to get this in the school system. But parents should really take a chance and take advantage of this and take it for themselves, take it for their kids, because it can change your life, man. It's crazy.
Mm. So much going on, and especially in this computerized age, we need to know more and more, if only to know all the passwords we have.
Yes, absolutely. Well, and also, the more we rely on computers and electronics, the more lazy our brain gets. There's actually evidence to show that our minds have become less able to remember information, like, as a generation. Since the 60s, it's been a steady decline, which is scary, isn't it? I mean, the more we rely on this technology to remember our phone numbers, the less we have to remember, and thus, you know, our brains aren't challenged. So be the one person that stands out in the crowd. Be that person with the competitive edge, and you'll get all the rewards.
Even more reason for people to remember Dave Farrow, and remember the website, yourmemorysucks.com. Dave, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us.
Hey, can I give a really quick tip for the holidays?
Yep.
All right. Next time you feel forgetful, guys, this is my favorite tip. Just look up. I know it sounds simple, but that's your natural tendency whenever you're trying to remember something. Anybody asks you directions and you automatically look up. The next time you feel forgetful or blanking out, just literally put your eyes into the top of your head, stare at the sky for a couple of seconds, and the information very often will pop right back into your head. And it's because the direction that you point your eyes actually helps you direct your brain in many ways. And, of course, there's a whole lesson in 7 minutes. You'll triple your memory on yourmemorysucks.com. So don't forget to log in and tell me how you like it.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Memory expert Dave Farrow. Again, you can check out his website at yourmemorysucks.com. I love that domain name, yourmemorysucks.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0067, and you'll find links to Dave's site.
The Stuff File.
And just before we wrap things up, it's time for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Okay, this one is short and sweet and quick. Theodore Davenport Jr., age 53, who was wanted for robbing the same PNC bank branch in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, twice in the previous month, was arrested in November when he approached a teller at that bank to inquire about the balance in his own bank account. Really, I can't make this stuff up if I tried. Why would someone go into a bank, the same bank he robbed twice in the last month, merely to inquire about his account balance? One reason and one reason only. He's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0067. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. And by going to thestufffile.com, you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And again, that's 0067. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PAholder and at Twitter at twitter.com/PAholder. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJMedia.com, aboard Taiwan's national carrier, China Airlines, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, Gold FM in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Guests of the Stuff File program stay at their own homes.
Trust me, I'm the voice for this program. I know there's no budget for accommodations. I'm reading this on a futon.